Welcome to Take Two Radio. I'm Pam, your host, and with me today, again, for the second day in a row, yay, I have Mike as my co-host.
Hey, Pam, you haven't gotten tired of me yet. Thank you. How you doing?
No, not yet. You know, give us maybe about 30 minutes, and then maybe I'll show you. I'm only kidding.
Awesome.
That's only because of that remark you made about wearing shorts today while I'm cold in Chicago.
I know. We take spring seriously out here. Sorry about that, Pam.
Yeah. Should I even bother to ask how many degrees it is today?
You know, it's supposed to get up to about 72 or so. If it's any consolation, I'm in my man cave right now, and it's kind of chilly. So I am wearing shorts, but I'm wearing a shirt over my other shirt. So I know you're thinking big deal, but...
Yeah, right. Probably what is chilly to you, we would be wearing our swimsuits in, you know.
Exactly. My blood thinned out since I moved back to California. You know, I was in the Midwest for 10 years, thickened up, then come back to California, and, you know, that's my roots right here, thin blood, and, you know, 65 feels cold.
My relatives used to tell us the same thing when we'd go out there, like, the very first time. Make sure you bring your jacket and sweater, and me and my family would look at each other like, what are you, nuts? You know? And they're like, it gets cold at night. It's only, like, 65. Come on. You used to live in Chicago. Come on. You know better. 65 below, and we're outside with no shoes on. But no.
That's right. It's all perspective, isn't it?
Yeah. But today we welcome singer-songwriter Jeff Powers, and he is also one of the top 25 guitarists that you should know about. So welcome, Jeff.
Hi. I didn't know I was one of the top 25 you should know about, but I remember now. Yeah.
I was going to say, you don't read your articles that people write about
you? That was
you?
A while ago. That was a while back. So I hope I went up in the rankings.
Yeah, I hope. But you have to agree, top 25 guitarists out of, like, probably millions of guitarists in the world. That's huge.
Yes.
Well, yeah. I would say it's subjective, but, you know. But it's nice to get that accolade. So.
Yeah, that's a huge compliment. I'd like to start out having you tell our listeners how you first started in music and who or what inspired you.
Okay. My dad always put on guitar music for me because he loved it, and then got me a guitar when I was about 8 or 9. And, you know, I didn't really take it serious, but I liked the guitar. And probably 5 years after that, it was that I heard Jimi Hendrix. Then I just, right there, I knew that moment I was going to do that forever. And it's kind of nice to know that. People tell me they're kind of envious because they never knew what they wanted to do. So it's not an easy life being a musician, but I never had a question what I wanted to do with my life or anything like that. Just carried that guitar around everywhere I went.
But have you been a musician pretty much your whole life then, full-time, never had to do a day job? Have you always been a musician?
No, in my early 20s, I did all the crappy jobs you can imagine because I didn't take it serious young enough, you know, to make a profession. I was teaching maybe when I was about 20, but as far as performing, no. I became a classical guitarist for a long time and got my degree in that. So during those years, in my 20s, I was actually learning classical music. So it takes a long time before you're really a good performer on that. So about the time I was getting really good at it, I decided I couldn't do it anymore and start playing blues and writing songs again and then performing.
Well, with learning classical music, I mean, did that help you make it easier to write blues?
It made it easier to write everything, but different, you know, a little bit. My blues aren't like pure blues. I'm not like old timey.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I'll, you know, spend a lot of time sitting with records and learning it, when I go to write music, it doesn't come out like, you know, the 20s, 30s, 40s blues or anything like that. So, and probably the influences of playing all the different types of music in classical. I mean, there's just so many things that I've worked on that those kind of harmonies and everything come out in my songwriting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, maybe it's a little different than the average singer-songwriter. But
right.
that was just an odd experience, kind of a weird way of getting there.
Well, when you write your music, do you write the lyrics first or the music?
Both, but in the beginning, I always did everything at one shot and kind of let the songs write themselves. But usually the lyric content isn't as good that way, for me at least, you know, because it's kind of dictated by what I did with the music. But so now I sit down and I just read and write for hours, just lyrics, you know, even nonsense, anything. and then later just sit with the guitar and something seems to always happen, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, what typically influences your songwriting? Is any of it autobiographical in nature?
Not too much, you know. Most of the time I would say I still let the songs write themselves, even though, you know, I might start with the lyrics this time. A lot of it, I would say, is fueled by anger and list from things I read about in the paper, you know, whatever controversial thing. I have one on the CD about the Kent State murders, just 40 years
yeah.
late, but,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
but I happened to read a story about that on the 40th commemoration of that, and I just got really angry again and tried to write something in the style of Neil Young.
Yeah, and that's kind of in your neck of the woods, too. I mean, Kent State, that's Ohio. It's close
oh,
to home
yeah.
for you.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I could drive down there in a half hour. And
wow.
sometimes I do go down there, you know. But, you know, I also was influenced a lot by Neil Young. That was probably my next biggest influence after Jimi Hendrix.
Wow.
And maybe Bob Dylan right in there. So... But,
well, I read a review where someone said you sound a lot like Bob Dylan in your lyrical content, and that's a huge compliment because he's one of the greatest writers and singers there are in the world.
Yeah, to me. I mean, I have not heard a songwriter that good ever. You know, and as much as I love Neil Young, Bob Dylan, there's just something he has. But I got, you know, I caught on to him later in life. I heard mostly his songs by other artists when I was younger. So, and now it's like I can't quit listening to him even now.
Well, he's a great storyteller with his songs.
Oh, yeah. And even I've heard him interviewed so many times and asking him if he could still write like that, and he said no. He doesn't even know that guy. And he listens to it, and he's kind of amazed.
Really?
Yeah, that how good the alliterations are and the lyric writing, you know, just he doesn't know who that guy is.
Wow.
And he said he could never be there again. You know, it's kind of a naive process, you know, that got him there when
yeah.
he was young. Now he's a lot more expert, yeah. A lot
yeah,
more
lots
expert
of
player.
Growth. Lots of growth,
yeah.
yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
So what possessed you to take your classical music training and then go into the blues? I mean, that's quite a shift.
Yeah, when I was young, I took some guitar lessons with this guy, and he showed me some blues, and I always liked it. I didn't know much, but it always stuck with me, and then I moved to New Orleans, and I heard some. But after playing classical for all that time, I heard Stevie Ray Vaughan play live, and I'm like, oh, this is what I want to do. And then I just happened to move to Mexico right after that. And I didn't know how to go into the blues because I was teaching and performing classical music. But somebody called me up out of the blue because he figured if I'm a guitarist, and it seemed like my name was American to him, maybe I played the blues. And he asked me, and I said, yeah, I didn't really that much. But I got in the band, and I learned from there.
Don't you need to have kind of a blues name, though, like Blind Lemon Powers or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They got to come up with some kind of disability here. Blind Lemon. Yeah, no.
Like.
Yeah. I have thought of throwing that in just for a joke, but I don't know. When I perform.
Well, I think Jeff Powers is a pretty easy name to remember for most people. So maybe it's good you kept it that way.
Yeah. No, it's an easy name, and it's easy for you to remember, too.
Right.
But Every time I say I'm a guitarist or my name's Jeff, everybody says Jeff Beck immediately.
Oh.
You know? So I don't know. He's synonymous with guitar playing, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's a guitarist name.
Now, do you have a band or do you play solo?
I've been playing mostly solo. Actually, I'm on my way to a rehearsal. I pulled over. And I'm rehearsing this blues band that I had for years called Dead Guy Blues. And, that I really haven't done anything with it for a few years, but we decided to do some gigs they're going to play actually on a CD release coming up for me.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah. And, but mostly what I've been doing is just a singer-songwriter, acoustic guitar, stomping on a tambourine, playing that three-string cigar box guitar you were talking about.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. I'm totally intrigued by that. You know, I've never really heard of it. First, I thought, oh, it must be like a Bo Diddley thing. And then I started reading up on it. I saw your video of I Missed My Ball and Chain, and I was thoroughly blown away by that. I mean, it's passionate. It kicked my butt, and you did it with half the amount of strings that you would find on a normal six-string guitar. So have you gotten into that recently? I mean,
I'm going to put out – I'm going to make a CD. I'm going to start about May just playing that thing. And stomping, though, I need that little extra percussion.
Yeah.
And it's really fun to play those things. I don't know how to explain it. Three strings, basically, most of the time you have a tune to two notes. And it's quite easy to play. And it forces you, I can't be too sophisticated or fancy Dan on the harmonies and stuff, you know, with the chords and all that. And it forces me to play more passionately. I love that thing, and there's all kinds, though. They have one string, which is the diddly bow you were talking about, two string on up, you know. And there's a whole bunch of people playing them now. It's getting quite popular. Well,
interesting.
Popular in a small way. But, yeah,
you know,
it's
interesting
awesome.
Because I've seen different websites, and you know, I've seen your video and a couple other players, and you know, I would throw you among the ones I would call virtuoso on that, at least to my eyes and ears. And then I saw some sites that say it's really easy to get into. So I'm sort of a frustrated musician. Okay, we'll call it a non-musician. We'll call it what it is. But would something like that be easy for somebody who really doesn't have any musical background? If I want to pick up an instrument, would that be a good starting point?
Yeah, if you like, I mean, you're going to immediately sound like, I have mine cranked up with distortion, but if you don't crank it up too loud, you're immediately going to sound like some guy out of Mississippi, you know.
Cool.
And so you have to like that sound. If you do, it's going to be really easy to play. Some of them, the one I'm playing on, is you don't even fret the left hand. You just play with the slide because the strings are too high. I have another. I ordered another one, and I'll be able to fret it. And I think you might want a four string because you might be able to do a little more with it. But the three string sounds so bombastic to me.
Mm.
You know, I have a. I don't know if you know your guitars, but there's a humbucker pickup in it, and they're pretty tough sounding. And I crank it up with a fuzz face and distortion on the vocals, sort of like the Black Keys.
Yeah. And now, my son's got an electric guitar, and he's into that. So he's got the humbucker, and he's got the loud fuzz tone distortion on his guitar. And I saw you play on the cigar box. I thought, you just sound like a monster on that thing. I just thought, that's a cool sound for such a simple device.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. And basically, all you're doing is playing a power chord, if you know what that is. It's a two-note chord. Because it's tuned to usually tuned to E and A, two E's and one A. So you can't help but sound like bombastic, like AC/DC or something like that, you know. Now, they have some fancier tunings, but I haven't had much success with the other tunings. You know, they start sounding Hawaiian.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, which would be cool on a tune or two, but not for all the playing, you know. Pretty much, I want to put out the CD. It's going to be more rock and roll or more aggressive blues.
Is that kind of a first? Has anybody done exactly what you're talking about before?
Yeah, I've seen, a lot of these people, the attraction is they make their own and they play. And there's some good guys out there. I think his last name is Spiel, and he's in Pennsylvania. He calls himself the king of the cigar box guitar. You know, I mean, he's, you know, I don't hear why he's better than the next guy, but he knows a lot. And he puts up videos showing you how to do it. So he's a pretty generous guy. I think he has a bar, a nightclub, where people come in and play that kind of music, rootsy stuff. So there's a couple other names, and most of them build guitars.
Pretty neat. I saw some kits out there, too, on Amazon. Like, unbelievable. Like, for about $25-$30, you can buy a kit. Then you go to the hardware store, buy some wood, make your own neck. So it seems like you could just go really raw on this thing and start out from almost scratch.
Yeah, I think CB Giddy or something, Cigar Box Guitar Itty, they sell those kits. I'm not one to build anything, but I figure it won't be as good as buying one. And it would take me quite a while because I don't have tools and stuff like that. But they're pretty raunchy. The one I have is not a very precise instrument. So I ordered one from a place called Mojo Daddy or Daddy Mojo Guitars in Canada. And they make them like real guitar makers make their instruments. They're really good. So it should show up next week. And they're up on the web. They're getting pretty famous because they got a write-up in Playboy magazine, for of all places. But
Yeah,
I don't know why, but they said they can't even keep up with how many they've been shipping out.
Wow.
Yeah, they're handmade, and they're not expensive either. You know, mine was, the one you see in the video is $200.
Oh, that's not bad.
And, yeah, no, and, you know, the one I ordered from up in Canada, Mojo Daddy or Daddy Mojo, is about $400.
Okay.
But, you know, it's a real instrument, though. So,
To bring up that I saw on your website, you have a widget called Guitaroki. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, I don't know. Is that what it's called?
That's what's on there.
Yeah. This press guy, I was a PR guy I have, just set me up with this guy, and he's got a lot of people, and he puts one song of many performers up there to learn how to play. But that's the first time I heard of it.
Yeah, well, the first time I've heard of it was when I went on your website and you're showing someone how to play your song, like Take a Ride, and I thought that was the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, but they actually do it for you. You know, that's them. I don't know who and how they do that, but it's really done well, other than, you know, the way I play, it's slightly different. You know, it's more of a generic chord. Instead, mine might be a little more detailed. But if you watch that and you know a couple chords, you can quickly learn the song.
Well, have you gotten any feedback from people that have used it?
No, I just put it up. You must have just saw it the other day.
Oh, I saw it last night, yeah.
Yeah. So that I didn't even know I had it to put up until I think 2 days ago, or maybe three.
Oh, okay.
So this is the first feedback. I'm surprised.
And I can't even tell you, you know, how good it is because I don't play the guitar.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And for
maybe, Mike, you should try that.
And for our listeners' benefit, what is your website? What's the address?
JeffPowers.net. JeffPowers.net, yeah.
Perfect.
And I'm going to have another one for the cigar box guitar, but I haven't come up with the name. It's still sitting up there. You know, Wix. It's like, yeah, I have it up there, but I got to come up with a name. That will be easy to find. Probably Jeff Powers isn't available.
No.
You might have to add maybe something to it you know, a little bit, a number even. Sometimes it'll work.
Yeah, that's how my SoundCloud is. There's so many Jeff Powerses that I think I'm number 6 on SoundCloud.
Yeah.
Jeff Powers 6 or 5, I forgot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
I get a lot of phone calls about, you know, is this Dave Powers the lawyer? No, I wish.
Really? It's my father's name, yeah.
Is it?
So, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I wonder if
there's
he's related somewhere down the line.
Good, yeah. The Irish are all related, I think.
I think so, too, yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, you have a CD release party coming up April 20th at the Winchester Hall. Is that in Ohio?
Yeah, that's like the west side of Cleveland. The city's kind of divided in half, east and west. And it's a really neat venue. It doesn't hold a lot of people, maybe 300, but they have seating for most. Yeah, there wouldn't be 300 seats, maybe 200, and tables. So people, you know, can sit down and actually listen. If you're tall, you have no problem at concerts, you know. But,
I'm in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like I get tired sometimes standing listening to someone because I, you know, on my toes trying to, I'm average size, but there's, a, you know, quite a bit of people out there 6'2", and they don't necessarily stand at the back.
Right.
So, yeah. So,
that seems to happen to me often if I go to a concert or a play or something, you know. I'm trying to see in between heads, and you want to tap somebody on the shoulder and say, you know, can you move somewhere else or move your head or, you know, but you just don't know how to do it really politely without them getting offended in some way.
It might not go down well.
Yeah.
I don't say anything like that. You could ask if you could sit on their shoulders or
right?
something.
Right. But if they're sitting with their wife or something, that might not be good either.
No, no.
Now, you said you you play out and gig out from time to time. Do you ever get outside of Ohio? Do you ever have any tours that take you outside your region?
Just a little bit, but now I'm going to book a tour with the Cigar Box guitar. As soon as I'm done with the CD, even though I'm having a CD release now, that's the singer-songwriter thing. In May or June, I'll have a CD with just Cigar Box guitar music, and that I would like to take on the road. You know,
cool.
It's unique, and it's easier to book than saying, okay, I'm a singer-songwriter with an acoustic guitar. And
that's true. There's a million of those.
Oh, it's just. It's unbelievable how many, and a lot of good ones, too. It's
well,
not
what's your
real...
favorite venue you've ever played at?
Man. They were probably in Mexico, some of the cool ones I was in. But, I actually enjoyed playing at that little elbow room in Chicago, the little acoustic room. I don't know if you've been in there.
I have not.
I've heard of it.
Elbow
without
the W. I guess.
Okay.
Or is that how you, is it
the
ELBO
room?
Yeah.
ELBO.
And they do a band downstairs and an acoustic person upstairs. It's hard to play really, you know, subtle acoustic there because you're probably getting some bleed from the band too.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay.
I was loud. So when I play acoustic, I also use a loop station. I don't know if you know what that is. It kind of it records what I'm playing.
Yes.
While I'm singing, and then when I go to do a solo, I just step on it and it loops those chords or whatever I'm playing, and then I can play more instrumental.
It's a
and
neat effect. I have a friend who's done that
yeah.
on violin, which is amazing. And then she'll accompany herself on guitar.
Yeah. Oh, it's awesome. Because it breaks up the you know when you're a singer-songwriter, you're sort of forced to either strum or finger pick the same chords kind of over and over. Certain keys you're going to gravitate, and it starts sounding the same. You strum the audience to death. And so with that loop station, you can really stretch out and make a lot more variety. It would be better if you had a nice big band to back you up all the time, but
right.
it costs so much money to pay people, you know,
for sure.
If it's my project, I can't ask somebody to get all excited and do it for free.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I've learned to perform solo because it's easier to get gigs that way and paid more.
Yeah. Well, California awaits you. We're hoping to see
really?
You out here if you can make it out to California.
I'm really going to try to book everywhere and anywhere and not stop from now on, you know. What I've done with my career is I keep going in different directions. A classical blues singer-songwriter, and so I would start a little thing, and then okay, I had enough of this, so I never took it across the country, you know. And
well, Mike could probably give you some great venues out there by him.
Yeah, I'd be glad to.
Oh, I would love to know. Yeah. Oh yeah. I don't know that part of the world. I mean, you're really in another country.
Yeah.
People tell us that all the time.
Yeah.
Many reasons.
No. Yeah. Well, it's a good thing. You know, it's nice, the diversity in this country. But I'm Midwest. Chicago's Midwest, but it's a big city. I love that city. I just wish it was warmer.
Well, that's me too. I keep saying someday I'm going to move somewhere where it's warm all year round because I can't stand the winters anymore.
Oh, yeah, it's killer. And the first time I was in Chicago as an adult, I forgot. I was just walking downtown, and my brother and friend, we thought we were going to die because of the wind going between the buildings.
Oh.
I ran as best I could looking for a place. It was cold, you know. We don't quite get that kind of wind in Cleveland.
Right,
cold.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we're not called the Windy City for nothing.
Yeah, I know. But I think it's created more from the buildings. I'm not sure, but
sort of compresses the cold wind and makes it more forceful than it otherwise would feel, probably.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cleveland
been so close to the lake,
like
you know.
That. Oh yeah, but it's beautiful. I've gone there a lot of times in the summer for some of the festivals, and I like to go up to Buddy Guy's Legends or Chicago Blue. Or Blues Chicago, there's several of them. And they got some great clubs. Cleveland's not an international city, really, so you don't have that. Any night in Chicago, you can have a packed house for live music.
Oh, definitely.
And the thing about Chicago, too, because I lived there for 10 years back in the 80s and 90s, the thing about Chicago is that there's an actual blues scene. I mean, most cities don't have a wide range of blues clubs to go to. They might just have clubs, but they have a specific genre. They've got blues there and clubs that focus on that, so it's pretty unique.
Yeah, our blues, everybody says they're playing blues, but I think there's only a couple cities that really have it anymore. In Cleveland, our blues is more like, I would call it classic rock, really, with a bluesy sound. Yeah, you know, Leonard Skinner rules the jukeboxes in most of the country, I think, and that's kind of the kind of blues you would hear most of the time in our clubs here. But when I go up to Chicago, I still hear there's a tradition still alive. I don't know. I've read articles that it is slowly dying. But, you know, and I guess some of the best venues for blues are a little bit dangerous, so I haven't found them.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah, you know, just you have to go through into a really bad neighborhood, and I don't know my way around. So I stick with the legend, Buddy Guy's Legends, and Kingston Mines is another one. Chicago Blue, and they're just fun. They stay. You're open to 4 or 4:30, which is great. You know, Cleveland would close at 2:30.
Same here. Probably more like 11 or midnight out here in Sacramento.
Really?
Smaller place than Cleveland.
Wow.
Yeah.
People are just getting started at that time, Mike.
I know.
Yeah. Well, that's why I love New Orleans all night.
Yeah.
The bands would quit about 4:30, but there's some bars, I know bars that open at midnight, and they don't have windows, so you wouldn't even know. You won't even know. You think it's still night, and you come out, and your eyes are burning.
Yeah.
But I'm a bit of a night owl, always was, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if I get around live music, I just want to stay. I don't want to go home, you know. So,
right.
Yeah, so
yeah,
Chicago's
you got that
great
energy up. It's, you know, gives you another wind and you need to go. And even so, just to wind yourself down.
Yeah. No, I think that's when the musicians really start playing good later, you know, that kind of music, at least blues and things. Earlier on, it might be nice and tight. But later on, you know, they might get some drinks in them. I don't know what, but they loosen up. So I think Chicago, I would move to Chicago if I couldn't get to a southern city. And there's only a few cities in the south that I'd want to live in. It's like I said, Austin and New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the great music. And Chicago would be like number three for me. It would be number one if it wasn't so cold.
Yeah.
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 Chicago's like a southern city without being in the south. They've got great music and they've got great barbecue there. They just have the cold weather.
Yeah. I was surprised, you know, the first time I went to Chicago, I was there without going out, But I had been to New York not too far from that time, and I got treated really bad when I first pulled in, you know, because I'm moving on a too slow of a pace, and people are beeping at you, yelling at you.
Uh-huh.
And then you start moving in New York time. But Chicago, I figured that was going to be the same thing. And the people are pretty warm there. They're really nice, you know.
Especially
well,
if
you
don't
think
so, Bam.
Too, I went to New York a few years ago for the first time, and I thought it was going to be like Chicago, like being downtown. No,
mm-hmm.
no, absolutely
no.
not. I mean, it's
no.
insane in New York.
Oh, yeah. It's a beautiful city. It's unbelievable. I liked it more when I was younger because it was pre-Giuliani, and
mm-hmm.
it was a lot more dangerous, but the clubs were cooler. And but, you know, they had to clean it up. I mean, it was pretty dangerous on the street. But now when you go to the village around that area, it seems like there are BW3s and stuff there. I don't know if you know what that is.
Wild no.
Wings. It's a, you know, wings kind of generic fire, you know, that.
Oh, okay.
Be,
oh, okay.
You know, yeah, kind of. So it's not as much fun for me in New York now.
If the character's been removed, yeah, I see what
right?
you're saying.
Yeah, a little bit of that nightlife and live music. I'm sure they got plenty of good stuff, but it just seemed cooler when I first was there. And the only thing that Giuliani did that I like is it's against the law to beep your horn in traffic, I think.
Really?
It's a lot quieter there now. Yeah.
I wonder if people that have lived there all their life, it's hard for them to sleep now without the horns beeping, you know?
Yeah. But it was noisy the first time I went. I was amazed. And the beautiful subway, the old subway, was so graffitied. It was like a moving piece of art. But they had to clean it up. It was dangerous. And now they got these pristine, nice, beautiful subways that aren't as much fun to go on for a
yeah.
tourist. But, you know, but they're safer.
Safer and that's, cleaner, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Now, I wanted to ask you, because I've seen this on TV, and I've always wondered if it happens in real life, have you ever been hired to play in a club and looked around to see, like, a bunch of metalheads giving you the eye when you started playing your music, and you thought, should I change my tune here or what?
Well, you get the – it's usually just a few people. There'll always be some guy, and you know, yelling out, like, rock, you know, or something,
yeah.
you know, trying to – like, I'm going to change my style. Or they'll yell out – I'll be playing all original music, and someone yells out to play some Lynyrd Skynyrd song or something.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
that
geez.
Always blows my mind. It's like, you know, get the record. I don't
yeah.
say anything. Weird,
right.
What I'm thinking is, like, I used to teach guitar. Sometimes I still do. But this guy I knew, he was teaching with me, and he had arrangements, Stairway to Freebird, and he would just tell the audience, I'm going to get these out of the way real quick for you. And he knew how to shut down hecklers or, you know, people like that. In the clubs, it's always going to happen, though. You know, and people can be rude, but most of people are actually very nice, the opposite, you know.
Mm-hmm,
and,
mm-hmm.
you know, come up to you respectfully
so
and give you a lot of compliments.
You're not behind, like, a cage thing where they're throwing beer bottles. I've seen that on TV.
No, but I've been in a few situations you feel like that. You just... I used to play with this guy, blues band, and he would just book anywhere. He would tell the person who would hire you anything.
Mm-hmm.
End up at swing dance parties for, you know, 70 or 80-year-old people, and we didn't play any swing. Or, you know, get us in a real redneck, I shouldn't probably use these kind of terms, but redneck joint, and where we're not appreciated at all. Yeah, we're too blues for a biker bar.
Yeah,
you know,
I would imagine.
Something like that. And I could see people getting irritated and angry,
mm-hmm.
you know, and including the owner. So,
and so your sets become a whole lot shorter then, don't they?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Or if you hit one song they kind of like, you play it for about, you know, 30 minutes. So there's ways to get around it, I guess. And in Mexico I felt, you know, some danger in some of the places I played.
Mm-hmm.
But not so much because they wanted heavy metal or something. I don't know why. Some people don't know what blues is there too much or don't appreciate it. And we were disturbing them, I guess.
Oh, their siestas.
One night I was playing in Mexico, and I kind of sensed somebody behind me, and I just looked over, and they were stealing the knobs off my amp and ran.
Oh, jeez.
That's the story.
Yeah.
That's
I think they just did it. I mean, they couldn't have been doing it for the worth of it. I think they were just doing it to mess me up or something. You know, or thought it was funny.
Yeah.
You know.
It is now.
Yeah,
now. I was furious, you know, but I didn't see the guy good enough. I would have never found him. Yeah, I wasn't going to jump off the stage either. Start chasing.
Yeah.
Mexico is a fun place, but it's crazy.
Oh, my gosh. I just can't imagine. I mean, do you stop playing and do you yell at them, or is anybody going to come after you? You kind of don't know what to do at that point, I would imagine.
There's not much I could do or anybody, but my Spanish isn't good enough to be yelling into the mic. It would be funny. So, you know, nobody would know what I was complaining about. That would be a subject I wouldn't be able to, you know, discuss well.
Right.
I knew enough Spanish to get around, buy food, you know, things like that, which is pretty shameful because I lived there a long time. But so many people speak English there that it was hard to learn, you know. And I was in a blues band.
I'm sure you had to know the swear words at least.
Oh, yeah. Well, the first day you're there, you know, that's what everybody wants to teach you. Yeah, you have to be careful, though, using that because you sound ridiculous if you don't use them right. And Mexicans are a lot more sensitive to words.
Right.
Because I, you know, almost got in a couple fights saying something that would normally not offend me or an American, you know, or not too much, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
It depends on how you phrase it a lot of times, even with just, because I tried to take Spanish. I took a semester of it. And it just seems like all their words are backwards, because if we think about how we speak in English and then have to phrase it in Spanish, you have to turn so many words around, and then one word can mean so many things. It was very confusing.
Oh, yeah. If you want to learn it, you go to Mexico City and right to the college, and they have these, they're really inexpensive courses, and they'll put you up in somebody's room in the house, and it's usually with people that don't speak English. And you're right by the classes, and you go in for about 3 to 5 hours a day. And you're just forced to be around Spanish.
You're totally immersed in the language, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to – see, what happened to me, I had a British singer in the group, and she, you know, you always go to the easier language. And I had a girlfriend that spoke English better than I spoke Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets really irritating to speak in the weaker language because there's too much miscommunication. And then I had a roommate that was American. And the only time I really, really started picking up some Spanish is I went on a trip for about a month outside of Mexico City where the people don't speak much English. And then I started actually thinking a little bit in Spanish because I had to. So, and I actually taught guitar there, and people would ask me, could you please speak in English? So I can kind of kill two birds with one stone.
Right.
And I was charging quite a bit, so I couldn't really say no. And I was lazy enough, too, to just go along with that program. So it's really hard in Mexico to pick it up because Mexicans, even if they only know a few words of English, will use it with you.
Yeah.
They'll speak Spanish and they'll answer in English.
Yeah, that kind of Spanglish thing, too, going on.
Yeah, I guess some other countries might not appreciate me trying to speak in English.
Yeah.
But in Mexico, people didn't mind. Once in a while, they would complain, but they didn't really mean it.
Right.
They like practicing English.
Yeah, that's a big thing with them. It's one of the countries that I know would love to learn English, and I think they even teach it in school.
Oh, yeah. And they see so much American television.
Mm-hmm.
And they might have the subtitles below, but they're hearing English all their life.
Right, exactly.
And so if they actually moved to the United States in a little time, they would be speaking, you know, at least enough to get around in just a couple weeks, probably. But I was there like 6 years, and I knew how to hail a taxi, order food, you know, things like that. That was
the
about
important
it.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Find the bathroom.
Yeah. And make sure you have a quarter on you, I think. I mean, one time I went to Mexico over the border from El Paso, and I had to use the bathroom. And when I went over there with my girlfriend, they were asking for a quarter just to get in the bathroom, and then you had to pay like another quarter to get like two little sheets of toilet paper.
Right. Oh. Yeah. Yeah, it's really uncomfortable to go in a bathroom with a guy who works in there selling you that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, please go away. I'll pay you to go away.
Right?
Yeah.
Here, let me give you a buck. I'll go around the corner.
But I've seen that starting to happen in the United States in some places. You know, I mean, some nightclubs, there'll be a full-time attendant in there, you know, and hopefully you have some dollars in your pocket to tip, you know.
Yeah.
It's a sad state of affairs when you have to
Isn't
pay
it?
To do that.
Tipping everywhere you go, you know.
Yeah.
And I just wish he wasn't there is basically it, you know.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Nobody likes an audience while you're doing that, so.
Yeah, I know. I'll pay you to sit outside.
Yeah. Well, before I let you go, I'd like to let our listeners know how they can listen to your music and look for your upcoming gigs and tours and that. You have a YouTube channel. Now, I'm trying to figure out by the title of it up at the top bar, it says Jeff Rex Bodine. Is that what it's under?
Yeah, with one F.
With one F, okay.
Yeah, and I didn't know when I named the channel that I was going to actually use it one day.
Yeah.
And you can't change the name, you know.
Oh.
And I would have to start another channel, and it's hard to populate it. And it's kind of, I found it difficult to do it again. I don't know why. Maybe there's something I don't understand about it. So it's, you know, youtube.com probably / Jeff Rex Bodine.
Right, right.
With one F.
Yeah,
and
well, I just put your name in. I put Jeff Powers, and I saw your picture, and it came right up. So they could even try that as long as they know what you look like.
Oh, yeah. So, well, what I'm doing is trying to put up one video a week. I don't know how well I'm keeping up. 1 to 2 videos, actually, though I kind of got set back because of the CD release. But and record and put on SoundCloud about 2 original songs a week, just with my acoustic guitar. And because I have all these songs that I've never recorded, and I want to at least put them up there. For a year, I'm going to do that until I get about 100 songs up there. So if they want to go to Jeff Powers, I think it's number 5 or 6.
I'm looking
SoundCloud.
At SoundCloud right now. You're number 5.
Okay. And I don't have many things up there yet, but there are a couple of those cigar box songs. I Miss My Ball and Chain and A Beer and Whiskey or something, and a couple off my CD, but I'm going to start uploading that. And my website, jeffpowers.net, has a lot
of
the YouTube videos and things like that.
So you're one of the top 25 guitarists we should know about. You're also one of the top 5 Jeff Powers we should know about.
You're right.
yeah, that's it. Number 5. I'm working my way to number 1, hopefully.
That's right.
But there's a lot of Jeff Powers that actually play music. And one even called me and connected. He goes, hey, can you help me book a gig around your town? And I thought about it, and I just really didn't respond. I just thought this is going to really be really confusing if I call a nightclub, you know, a talent buyer and get them another Jeff Powers to play.
Right.
And I noticed a couple of his songs actually got stuck on my MySpace. I can't get them off. Yeah, I don't know why. Some glitch in the system or something. And it kind of bothered me because I don't want people to think I wrote the song.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I know, too, that you're on Bandcamp, so that one's easy, jeffpowers.bandcamp.com. And then also on Facebook under Jeff Powers Music.
Yeah, Jeff Powers Music for Twitter also.
For Twitter, yeah. I actually found that out late last night. I didn't even realize you were on Twitter, and then I tagged you with the interview for, you know, last night and today.
Oh, I haven't been there tonight. But
oh, okay.
Other than answer Mike's thing.
Yeah. Well, they could pretty much find you anywhere as far as listening to the music, but they can also purchase your music on CD Baby. Do you sell it on iTunes as well?
It's there somewhere out there, you know, because CD Baby, if you give them permission, will distribute it to all those outlets. And also my website, if you just went to jeffpowers.net,
mm-hmm.
the CD Baby store is right there. I mean, there's you can buy singles or the complete CD.
Okay.
Now, my dead Guy Blues isn't up there, I don't think. That sounds quite a bit different, though. So I almost don't promote the two at the same time.
Mm.
It sounds like another person.
Right. It's how you have evolved.
Yeah, yeah. Those are older.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Jeff, and wish you all the success with your new tour and gigs, and make it on by Mike over there, too.
Yeah,
oh, yeah,
I hope you
yeah.
make it out here.
And also shoot me a message or something, and I'll get you a couple of those companies that make those cigar box guitars or kits. You
that
can look into it. They even have videos on how to play them. So
oh, great.
They're pretty
great.
Easy. Yeah.
Very good. Very good.
For
now,
the
I want to thank you, too.
Yeah.
Pleasure meeting you, and the stories are awesome. Really, really enjoying your music, and really enjoyed the time spent with you, Jeff.
Yes,
oh, thank you.
Thank you, Mike. And when you leave us today, I'm going to go ahead and play one of your songs for our listeners, which is the 13 Seconds, 67 Shots.
Yeah.
Since you spoke about that one, I'll go ahead and play that. And it's a song that very much touched my heart and just brought me to the edge of tears because it's, you know, based on a real story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, thank you very much. I've been in touch with one of the victim's sisters who really is pushing all the time to get this into the international court. Her name is Laura Krause. Her sister was Allison Krause that was killed there. And there's a lot of people still active in this because it's just been shoved, swept under the carpet. So I hope people, understand the message in it. You know, I don't know if everybody's aware of Kent State as much as we are here, but
I'm pretty sure that they are. I mean, it was on the news. Anything that happens like that is pretty much covered, I think, throughout the world.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a big deal.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Just making sure.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like to joke, I'm 40 years late, but, you know, every bit helps.
Oh, yeah. It does. It does.
Yeah.
It keeps it in everybody's minds, and that's what needs to be done for any change to be made.
Yeah, absolutely. No more open firing on students for speaking
Please.
Their mind. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Well, thanks again, Jeff, and you enjoy the rest of your weekend and try to stay warm.
Yeah, you too. And Mike, I hope you're not freezing too bad in those two T-shirts.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, I'm making do here. I'm surviving.
Okay.
Thanks,
All right,
Jeff.
Well,
I
you take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so you're going to take up that cigar box guitar thingy? Because I want videos.
It sounds pretty intriguing. You know, what I might do is just pantomime like I'm playing it, but then use Jeff Powers' music underneath so it looks like I know what I'm doing.
You shouldn't have warned everybody. Everybody heard that now.
That's right. They'll look at me and say, oh, that's too good. That's got to be Jeff Powers in the background. So cigar box guitar, right?
Yeah. Maybe they'll make one of those video games, you know, how they have, like, Guitar Hero with the regular...
Yeah.
Guitar thing. Maybe they should do a cigar box. Here, there you go. We can get together and get that out there.
There you go. Cigar box Guitar Hero.
Right.
Awesome. Wow, what a really interesting guy, though. He's got quite the history with the instrument and just with the blues in general. He's been around. He's seen and played some stuff.
Right. Well, it's funny how he went from classical to blues. I mean, that's, like you said, a big leap.
Yeah, that tells you he knows his stuff, though. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I know some rock musicians who are classically trained, and you know what? They appreciate all genres, and they're really good at what they do, and I think the classical training has everything to do with it.
Exactly. You got to start somewhere, and I think that's probably one of the better ways to start because you do learn so much. It's so detailed and so many different things that you have to learn from it, then when you do go to blues or rock or something, it's a little bit easier for you.
Yeah, you have all the music theory background, and it's just, I think you're just better armed to face anything, and probably helps him with his songwriting too, I'd imagine. He said he could write songs and lyrics at the same time. I'm going to guess that it's because he's so accomplished and he has that background. I think other people probably have to break it down. In some songwriting teams, one person does only lyrics and one does only the music, so I think the classical training helps.
Exactly, yeah, because anybody I've ever asked that question to has never said that they've written them both together like that.
Nope, I've never heard that before either.
Yeah. Well, Mike, I want to thank you for joining me again today. It's been a pleasure, and can't wait to have you back again sometime in the near future. I hope you had fun.
Oh, it was a blast. I'm definitely looking forward to the next one, too. Thanks again for letting me play along here.
Oh, you're welcome. And I'm going to go ahead and play the song 13 Seconds, 67 Shots, and we'll talk again soon, Mike.
Yeah, take care, Pam. See you next time.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
From the Victory Bell over Blanket Hill, no one closer than a football field, but close enough to hell. From the Victory Bell over Blanket Hill, going over 20 years old, but old enough to kill. 13 seconds, 67 shots at 12:24 p.m. 13 seconds, 67 shots at 4.
And that was 13 Seconds, 67 Shots by Jeff Powers. Sad story, but I'm glad that he's keeping it visible, and maybe things will change in the world someday. Very much enjoyed working with Mike again today, and we will definitely be doing another show together. Not sure exactly when yet, but we'll let you know. Follow us at Take Two Radio on Twitter, and you'll be able to see, you know, our next interview, as well as check out our website, take2radio.com, and that's the number two. We have our upcoming guest on there. We have podcasts from the previous guest and so many other things that I think you'd enjoy. And with that, I'm going to say good night, everybody. Thank you for joining me. Thanks, David, Michelle, and Mel for being in the chat room. I really appreciate your support. And I'm glad Mike found the chat room. Maybe next time he can chat a little bit when we're doing an interview. And everybody, God bless, and enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
Tonight's show has been brought to you by One Taste of Main Street Cake Shop. Baked from scratch, custom-made cakes and cupcakes, and you'll be hooked. Every cake is made to order with only the finest and freshest ingredients. This is no ordinary bakery. Cakes are never pre-made. Main Street Cake Shop is in demand, having provided cakes and cupcakes for numerous prestigious events, bridal fairs, and venues. Owned and operated by April Murray, she has garnered many awards for not only her exquisite cake designs, but also for their incredible taste. If you're looking for a cake for any occasion, or cupcakes in a variety of flavors, then Main Street Cake Shop is the place. Visit them on the web at mainstreetcakeshop.com. Thanks for listening to tonight's show. You can connect with Take Two Radio on Twitter at Take Two Radio and at Dawn Take Two Radio. You can also look us up on Facebook at Take Two Radio. Check out our website at take2radio.com. And follow us on Blog Talk so you can stay up to the minute of each episode as we add it. Each episode is always available for download immediately following each broadcast. And you can also download every podcast on iTunes. Thank you for joining us.